and welcome to Fauns and Fauna, a podcast about creatures real
or otherwise.
I am the Grand Admiral of Wikipedia.
Whoa.
Cody. And with me, as ever, is the...
Happy it's warm outside, Ash.
There we go. But you're feeling happy.
Mm-hmm.
Sun is up. Clouds are out.
We went to a really cool playground today.
We did.
That was really fun.
It was a beautiful playground with our beautiful child.
The best thing about this playground is that it is completely fenced in.
Mm-hmm.
So it's still like outside and nice, but there's a fence around it. So you don't have to worry about one, weirdos coming in and snatching your children. And two, you don't have to worry about your children running out into the danger zone.
Yep. The kids can run wild.
Yep.
Just like how we run wild on this podcast.
True. Speaking of running, the creature that I am bringing today is very good at running.
Well, let's hop in. Well, fair enough.
The creature that I am bringing for you guys today is none other than the Arctic hare.
Oh.
Yes. So it's going to be quite a bit shorter than my other creatures. One, because they are small. And two, because there just really isn't a lot to know about these guys. But
so when we do the blue whale, it's going to have to be like a three-parter just to get every single inch of these big, beautiful boys.
Exactly.
But let's hop. You already said it. Let's carry me away with these little rabbits.
So let me hit you with some fast facts. They are found in the North American tundra, and their conservation status is of least concern.
Yes.
They have shorter ears and limbs and a smaller nose than other wild rabbits, which helps them survive in the tundra because they don't have as much surface area.
Ah, nice.
20% of their body is fat.
Huh.
Yeah.
That's a lot for a hare.
Yes. Well, they need it, you know. Yeah.
Little chonky guys. They got little stubby ears and little chonkers.
Yeah. They can run up to 60 kilometers per hour or 40 miles per hour. So they are very fast.
Wow.
Yeah.
Have you said how big?
Not yet.
Okay.
So they will occasionally huddle together with other hares in their dens to stay warm.
Mm-hmm.
And now moving into their anatomy, they measure from 43 to 70 centimeters, about 17 to 28 inches from snoot to toot.
Dude, that's... Wow.
Yeah. So they're pretty big.
Yeah.
Their tails can be 4.5 to 10 centimeters or 1.8 to 3.9 inches long.
Hmm.
I feel like that's a thing that a lot of people don't know about rabbits. Their tails are not those little like puff balls. Like
tails.
You can stretch them out. And,
oh, huh.
Yeah. And
then like
be long.
Pig tails where it like curls around itself?
No, it just like... They, like, suck it into their butt, kind of.
Oh, okay. Fun. Little accessory.
Yeah. They can weigh about 2.5 to 5.5 kilograms or 6 to 12 pounds.
Okay.
And they have a bright white coat in the winter, which helps them blend in with the snow. And as the snow melts, the hare's pelt will change color to like a bluish gray, which helps them to blend in with the rocks and stuff.
Nice.
Because of their low surface area, these animals are able to maintain a core body temperature of 38.9 degrees Celsius or 102 degrees Fahrenheit.
Whoa.
So they run way warmer than we do.
These dudes run hot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like I said, it's all because of their low surface area. Like, mm-hmm. They have smaller ears, they have like smaller legs and stuff like that.
I've never thought about like animals, like their ideal temperature being, that's pretty dramatic.
Yeah.
Like, dramatically different from
humans.
That's
a fever for us.
Yeah.
Like a high fever.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Weird.
They also have a very low metabolic rate, and that allows them to save energy.
Interesting.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, I feel like with rabbits, I always would think that they would have a high metabolic rate, but...
Like, not quite hummingbird level, but it's another, like, small thing that goes fast.
Yeah, but with them, since they live in the tundra,
that's true.
You gotta do whatever you can. So their fur doesn't just act as camouflage. It also potentially prevents overheating during the day by reflecting sunlight, which is something
Yeah,
I wouldn't have thought that overheating would be a problem in the tundra, but I guess like as the sun is beating down in the summer,
yeah,
that it would be a problem.
And they
so
also, they just run hot.
Yeah, that's true. Hmm. Their body size fluctuates, like a lot of animals that we've seen in the tundra, and it is based on the season, so they're much smaller in the winter than they are in the summer. And the hares are also impacted by where they live in the tundra, so rabbits found further south have a larger body mass than those closer to the Arctic Circle, because the food availability in those areas varies a lot. So now we are going to move into the life and behavior. They go between being alone and being in large groups, and their large groups are like far surpass what I would have guessed would be.
Really?
Yeah. So if you had to guess what a large group of Arctic hares would be, what would you think?
40.
Way more.
Really?
Way more.
How many?
Sometimes up to the thousands.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
I've never heard of like rabbits being especially communal.
I didn't either.
Interesting.
Yeah. So that was very surprising to me. Their breeding usually occurs in April to May. And what will happen is if they are in a large group, they'll kind of like branch off and go off on their own, like with their couples, you know, and they don't really go back to the large group. It just kind of, they just go off and do their own thing.
Just during the mating season?
That I saw that that can be a time when they would separate, but I also didn't see anything that would get like that indicated why they would meet in such large numbers.
Yeah.
Because when they are cold, they will den with other rabbits, but not like that. Because like it's in a den, you know, you can't fit thousands of rabbits in a den. So yeah, the gestation period is about 53 days, and the females will give birth to one litter of between 2 to 8. They're called leverets, which is cute. Between 2 to 8 leverets a year in the springtime. The young are mature and go off on their own by the fall of the same year.
Okay.
So, which I feel like that we've seen quite a few animals recently where like born in the spring, mature in the fall.
Yeah.
There isn't really much known about the life expectancy, but it's assumed to be around 3 to 5 years, which I'm guessing is just the average life expectancy of a wild rabbit. They cannot survive in captivity at all.
Really?
Yeah. They do not do well for a number of reasons, I'm assuming.
Interesting.
But I would say that most of it probably has to do with the difficulty of replicating their natural habitat.
Oh, yeah.
So, and also like, we don't really know why they would meet in such large groups or anything, but if that has a huge impact on their well-being, then obviously if they're taken outside of that, they're not going to do well.
Yeah.
So, hares survive by eating plants, moss, and lichen. So as I was doing research for this, I realized how similar they are to caribou. Like, they are very similar. They molt and change color based on the season. Their body composition changes so much based on the season. They can meet in huge groups or kind of be like a little bit more reserved in that regard. So yeah, they will eat berries, flower buds, leaves, roots, bark during the spring. And scientists have discovered that about 70% of their diet comes from legumes. These homies must be tooting up a storm.
Some like Arctic wild legumes?
Yeah, apparently. Huh. In order to get their water intake, they'll eat snow, which is pretty common, but animals do have to be careful with that because they can fill up on snow and it can kill them.
Yeah.
So when they're resting, they'll make themselves into like little balls to keep warm. And their natural predators are the Arctic fox, the red fox, the wolf, the mountain lion, the lynx, the ermine, the snowy owl, and falcons and hawks. The Arctic fox is their main predator, and falcons will capture smaller hares, bite them in half, and use their bones and feet to make their nests.
That's pretty metal.
And moving into the humans' relations portion, which is super, super short, they're important to the indigenous peoples of the tundra, which by providing food, clothing, and tools. And that's all I have on the Arctic hare. So not a lot, but well, there you go.
Fast animal, fast segment.
There you have it. So what creature did you bring for me this week?
Well, I got something that I pulled out one of the big guns.
Oh, boy.
Just a little behind the scenes. Ash told me that this was going to be a shorter one.
I did.
For her. And so I said, we're going to just put this tiger on the table and we're going to talk about it. So this is something that you're a little bit familiar with.
Okay.
and I'm sure a lot of our friends at home might be a little familiar with.
Okay.
It's also, it ended up being a lot spookier than I had originally. So there's going to be a point where I'm going to warn you, my wife, who I love, and also our friends at home in the event that they're, you know, just, I don't know if you have a small child listening to this, but it spooked your big brave boy over here.
Well, so, I love spooky stuff, so I'm here for it.
With that said, today we're going over Mothman.
Oh, I actually don't know anything about Mothman.
Well, then I take back what I said.
The only thing I know about Mothman is that there's something about him that's in West Virginia.
That is very true. In fact, we're going to start right now. So, November 12th, 1966, in Clendenin, West Virginia.
Hey.
A group of gravediggers working in a cemetery spot something strange. They glance up from their work as something huge soars over their head. A massive figure that was moving rapidly from tree to tree. The gravediggers would later describe the figure as a brown human being. That is the first, like, the earliest we see the Mothman. However, it is not the most popular story of the Mothman.
Okay.
So, 3 days later, after the gravediggers report in nearby Point Pleasant, which is Mothman HQ.
Yes.
Two couples noticed a white winged creature about 6 or 7 feet tall while on a drive.
Hmm.
So Roger and Linda Scarberry and Steve and Mary Millette were driving together on State Route 62 near the abandoned National Guard Armory building and power plant when they saw a menacing figure standing in the headlights.
Like on the road?
On the, like in the middle of the road. They're just, you know, it's the 60s, so they're just out on a drive and they just, a figure 6 or 7 feet tall in the middle of the road.
Oh.
Its giant eyes shone bright red and panic set in. Roger, the car's driver, sped away toward town. Good move, Raj.
Yes.
But the creature followed. According to eyewitness accounts, the thing rose up like a helicopter.
Wait. Rose up like a helicopter as in straight up? Or... Okay, because I'm picturing him just like taking his hands and like twirling them really fast.
I think he might have used his giant moth wings.
Well, yeah. But when you said take off like a helicopter, because helicopters literally just go like straight up with...
Yeah.
Okay.
So according to them, he was a clumsy runner, but it actually kept pace with them in the car, even as the car reached 100 miles per hour.
Whoa.
This thing was keeping up with them.
Flying?
Flying, yeah, yeah. It running, it could take a couple notes from the hair because it was just kind of like bumbling around.
That's
like,
relatable. Yeah.
But in the air, so graceful, so beautiful. It allegedly chased their vehicle to the outskirts of town in the air, and then it scuttled into a nearby field and disappeared.
Hmm. The idea of a 6 foot tall, like humanoid-esque figure scuttling is so scary to me. Yep.
But you just gotta remember, it looks so silly when it runs, but then it just takes off like a helicopter and just zooms after you at 100 miles per hour.
Yeah.
Giant bright red eyes. So, Scarberry insisted to the newspaper that the apparition couldn't have been a figment of his imagination, saying, "If I had been by myself, I wouldn't have said anything. But there were four of us who saw it." Which, like, I'm right there with you, Scarberry.
Mm-hmm.
At first, reporters were skeptical, obviously, in the papers. They called the Mothman a bird or, like, just some mysterious creature. Like, people were like, no, it's just, like, this crane or something mm-hmm. that lost its
or
way.
Or a big bat or something like that.
However, they did print Millet's description that it was a man with wings.
Okay.
However, there were more sightings reported in Point Pleasant over the next year as the legend of Mothman began to take shape.
Hmm. Do you get into, like, his origins? Like, where he came from?
Well, there are some theories.
Okay.
We'll get into those.
Okay.
The Gettysburg Times reported 8 additional sightings in the short span of just 3 days after that first claim. They included 2 volunteer firefighters who said they saw a very large bird with large red eyes. So again, giant thing with wings and big glowing eyes.
Yeah.
Newell Partridge, who is a resident of Salem, West Virginia, which is like 20 to 40 minutes away. It's like pretty close to Point Pleasant. Claimed that the night before the car chase, he saw strange patterns appearing on his television screen. Following a mysterious sound outside of his house. Partridge grabbed a flashlight and went outside to investigate the noise where he saw 2 red eyes resembling bicycle reflectors looking back at him.
Okay, folks. All I'm going to say is if strange goings-on are occurring outside of your house, don't go outside.
It's the 60s. And this is West Virginia, baby.
That's why so many people were, like, murdered. Because they, like, either went outside or, like, they would hear a knock on the door and without checking, they'd just open it up. People were too friendly. Don't be friendly to strangers.
Hey, mama, welcome to the 60s. Partridge's encounter led to the disappearance of his dog. And to this day, people believe that the fearsome beast took his dog. And I know what you're thinking, like, oh, he had, like, you know, his little schnauzer or his little beagle, like, outside because it's like late fall, so it's a beautiful night. Dog is just doing its thing. It was a German Shepherd that this thing made off with. And the German Shepherd didn't make a sound. Like, that's something that he would have been like, hey, like, my dog was going crazy. It's just like, no, some weird stuff happened on my TV and my dog was gone.
New theory. The Mothman really needed a friend. And the German Shepherd just felt that. And so he went with him to keep him company for the rest of his life.
Well, or he needed the German Shepherd for his dark machinations, which we'll get into very shortly.
Oh no!
So, flash forward 1 year from just that crazy string of sightings.
Okay.
And we have the Silver Bridge collapse, which is like the thing for the Mothman. But before we go into that, we're going to get into his mythos. Okay. And kind of build up. So, the story of Mothman 2.0. A lot of what we know from the Mothman comes from a book called The Mothman Prophecies, mm-hmm. which was later turned into a movie starring Richard Gere.
Okay.
Now, I didn't have time to read this book, and I couldn't track down this movie. So, I read a bunch of articles and movie reviews, and this is essentially the plot of said book and movie.
Okay.
We begin with John Klein and his wife, who early on are involved in a car accident when his wife, Mary, swears to avoid a huge flying black figure.
Okay.
Sounds pretty familiar.
John survives the crash unscathed, but Mary is hospitalized. There she is diagnosed with a completely unrelated brain tumor and shortly thereafter passes away.
Okay.
John discovers her sketchbook of terrifying drawings of a, quote, moth-like creature with red eyes she drew over and over and over again while she was hospitalized. 2 years later, John becomes lost in West Virginia and inexplicably finds himself in Point Pleasant, hundreds of miles off route. He is just supernaturally drawn to Point Pleasant.
Right.
Driving in the middle of the night, his car breaks down and he walks to a nearby house to get help. Again, it's the 60s. Your car breaks down. Everyone in West Virginia is super friendly, so you just go and you find someone and knock on their door.
Or you wait it out until the daytime and walk until you find a police station and hope that they're the good police.
The owner of said home is Gordon Smallwood, and he freaks out when he sees John and pulls a gun out on him.
That's what I would do.
Local police officer Connie Mills shows up and calms everyone down. So John and Gordon are both giving their point of view. John's like, I don't know. I just, like, my car broke down. I came here to get help. And Gordon says that this is the third consecutive night that John has knocked on his door at 2:30 p.m. exactly asking for his phone.
Whoa.
Connie and John are both like, huh, that's weird. Are you sure? And Gordon's like, yeah. And so John turns around and heads to a local motel to just kind of like figure out what's going on and figure out how he got so far from his original destination. Later, Officer Mills discloses to John that many other strange things have been happening over the last few weeks as people are like reporting sightings of a strange creature with large wings and red eyes. She also tells him about a strange dream that she had in which she hears, wake up, number 37. And it's like she just hears that in her dreams. During that same conversation with Gordon, Gordon reveals to John that he has heard voices coming from his sink telling him that in Denver, quote, 99 will die. And this is when it starts to get kind of spooky.
Dude, I would have moved so fast.
Again, this is when it starts to get spooky. So while discussing the day's events at a local diner, John notices that the news is showing a story of an airplane crash in Denver that killed 99 passengers. The next night, Gordon frantically explains that the voices in his head emanate from a being named Indrid Cold. Gordon calls John and says that he's standing next to Indrid Cold. While John keeps Cold...
Wait, says that John is standing next to Indrid or that he himself is standing next
to... So Gordon calls John on the phone and says, I am standing next to Indrid Cold. John keeps Cold on the phone as Officer Mills goes to check on Jordan. Cold gives John details about his life that only he, John, knows. And John tests Cold with questions that only he could know if he were in the same room with him. All of this over the phone. John is convinced that Cold is wicked spooky and Johnny Boy needs to get the heck out of there.
Yes.
This particular event escalates a string of supernatural calls to John's motel room from Cold. One tells him that there's going to be a great tragedy on the Ohio River. Later, John receives a cryptic call from Gordon and rushes to his home to check up on him. He finds Gordon outside, dead from exposure.
Oh, wait, that's not going to happen overnight unless it's like in West Virginia?
In West Virginia gets really cold up in the mountains.
But I thought it was fall.
No, now it's like December.
Oh, okay.
Because we started in the fall and all right. These things, we started like early, like November-ish.
Okay.
So John then becomes obsessed with the local Mothman legend and arranges to meet an expert on the subject, Alexander Leak. Leak basically tells him that it's bad news bears and that he needs to stay the heck away, which, like, fair enough, Leak. However, when John learns that the governor plans to tour a chemical plant located on the Ohio River the next day, he becomes convinced that the tragedy will occur there.
Makes sense to me.
When John goes to meet the mayor, the mayor and Officer Mills, Connie, are like, no, it's nothing. It's going to be totally fine. And it is.
Oh.
So after that, John gets yet another mysterious correspondence where he's told to go back to his house and wait for a call from his deceased wife on Christmas Eve. So that's exactly what he does.
Okay.
He's like, well, I was wrong about the whole chemical plant thing. I guess it's all in my head. I'm going to go wait for a call from my dead wife.
He says, I guess it's all in my head and not, I should probably go to a hospital and get seen by someone.
Well, he's going through a lot.
I mean, yeah, but if I thought that I was that nuts, I would go, like, talk to someone.
Well, and...
But also, it's the 60s.
If you're going through something at home, you should talk to someone, too. This episode's brought to you by BetterHelp, not really.
Oh, that would be great, though.
Yeah, it would. BetterHelp, hit us up. So, on Christmas Eve, Officer Mills calls John to convince him to just ignore the whole call from Mary thing. Officer Mills is like, no, like, your wife's not really going to call. So, she basically tells him, hey, you should come back to Point Pleasant. And you can come have dinner at my place because you shouldn't be alone on Christmas Eve.
Okay.
So despite being the big sad, John's like, you know what? You're right. And so John drives back to Point Pleasant where he reaches the Silver Bridge. Now, a malfunctioning traffic light causes traffic congestion on the bridge. John walks out to investigate. Just then, the bolts and supports of the bridge start to strain. The bridge comes apart and John realizes that the prophesied tragedy on the Ohio River was about the bridge. As the bridge collapses, Officer Mills' car falls into the water. John jumps in after her and pulls her up the river to safety.
That's very stupid.
Well, he did save her.
Yeah, but jumping into the river right after a bridge collapsed with a bunch of cars on it, that is not safe.
He is a hero because he does save her.
Well, I just don't want anybody that's listening to us to think that that is a realistic thing that would happen, because it very much is not. You would die.
You just wait for the car to get all the way to the bottom and then you don't get sucked up under.
Yeah, but if you don't know how deep the river is, you could, like, if the car is like a foot under the, like, surface of the water, you're going to hit the car and it's just going to be bad news.
So the two of them are sitting on an ambulance and they're informed that 36 people have been killed in the bridge collapse.
Wait.
And that makes Connie the number 37 from her dream. The cause of the bridge collapse is never fully determined, although Mothman was sighted on the, like, sighted right before the collapse, mm-hmm. and he's been sighted surrounding other like tragic events all around the world since then. However, that is the last time that Mothman has ever been seen in Point Pleasant.
Weird.
And that is the story of the Mothman and the Silver Bridge collapse.
Weird.
Now, it's time for a very fun game that's going to be kind of sad because it's all about tragedies, but play along at home. So, I'm going to give you an event and a date.
Uh-huh.
All of these are tragedies that it's like big sad events, but Mothman has been sighted at some of them, and he's to blame for all of them.
Okay.
But you got to tell me whether it's Mothman or not.
Okay.
Okay? Chernobyl disaster of 1986.
I'm going to go with no.
That is Mothman.
Really?
Yes. The Moscow apartment bombing of 1999.
No.
Mothman. 9/11.
100%.
Mothman. The NSYNC breakup of 2007.
Sure.
No. That one's on us. That was the people. The people had that. The Mexican swine flu outbreak of 2009.
Absolutely.
Mothman. Battlestar Galactica being canceled in 2009.
Mothman.
Studio greed. Okay. And so that's all we have for Mothman. Unless you want to talk about the Mothman Festival. Yes, there's an entire Mothman Festival every year in Point Pleasant, which it's free to attend. There's a hayride that costs $5. And there's all kinds of statues and merchandise, a museum you can visit, which I think the museum is also $5. But you can go online and pre-register and keep Point Pleasant weird.
So no one knows where he came from?
Well, where did Mothman come from? Excellent question. I'm glad you asked. There are many theories. There are two that I remember, and I think there are two of the most popular ones.
Okay.
One, we talked about dark machinations.
Uh-huh.
His ability to see the future.
Uh-huh.
His ability to just kind of interact supernaturally with beings.
Uh-huh. His ability to seduce a German shepherd.
His ability to seduce a German shepherd. Mothman is a demon sent from the bowels of hell in order to just kind of cause chaos as demons are wont to do.
Okay. My only thing with that is demons aren't all-knowing.
Well, he's not all-knowing, though. He just has, like, supernatural knowledge of things.
Yeah, but he knew all the stuff about that guy's room and yeah. everything.
So he could have, like, another demon there watching him, and they could have, like, a demon cell phone call at the yeah. same time. The second one is, it's the 60s, baby. He's an alien.
See, that's what I was thinking, because when you mentioned the guy who, like, the first guy whose dog went missing.
Yep.
Like, that was very reminiscent of, like, UFO abductions.
Absolutely. And, obviously, it's the 60s, so people are obsessed with UFOs, mm-hmm. and a lot of things in the papers will use, like, UFO imagery, and I
yeah.
think they even claimed, like, Mothman is an alien from another planet, so, like,
ooh. Yeah, that would, I mean, I don't think that any of that is real or true. I think it was the 60s, and people were bored. But alien theory is, like,
Mothman,
my favorite.
I think Mothman was an alien.
Yeah, that's my favorite theory.
He came to just spread love, and he was sorely misinterpreted.
Well, thank you for taking us to Point Pleasant.
Thank you for joining me.
Teaching us all about Mothman and how creepy he is. And thank you guys so much for listening. We hope that you have been doing great, and you are doing a great job.
And if you're having a bad day, remember, at least you don't have teeth in your butt.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.